Welcome to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small, your source for the latest hunting and fishing information. Brought to you by LakeLink, your online fishing resource at lake-link.com.
We're also brought to you by Huntworth Gear, the highest value hunting brand, available at Blaine's Farm and Fleet and other retailers, and at huntworthgear.com. And by Professional Hearing Care, LLC of Mauston, La Crosse, Westby, Fitchburg, Green Bay, and Waupaca. They are the highest-rated hearing health care clinic in Wisconsin, profhearingcare.com. I'm Dan Small. Today, we'll get some bow hunting advice, hear about the Jordan Buck celebration coming up next month in Danbury, and take a look at Louis Spray's world record muskie. All that and more coming up on Outdoors Radio, so stay right there. If you're ever in a motor vehicle accident, call Hupe and Abraham, named best personal injury law firm by the Wisconsin Law Journal year after year. The firm of Hupe and Abraham has collected more than $1 billion for its clients. In fact, they collect millions of dollars every month for hundreds of satisfied clients. Call the firm voted best and rated best, Hupe and Abraham, 800-800-5678, or visit hupe.com. And all 11 offices of Hupe and Abraham in Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois are open for business. Jeff Kelm joins us from Wisconsin Rapids again this week. Oh, Jeff, we were short on time last week, but I want to hear about your annual camping adventure with Robert. How did that go?
It went well. It was, so they've started, up on, all of the different flowages that the DNR has camping available on the islands. They have started the reservation process, much like they do at the state parks and, state campgrounds around, Wisconsin. And, so this was the first year that, you know, we had to abide by that, and we didn't know what we were going to necessarily run into. The campsite that we typically would go, because they used to be just first come, first serve, was booked out. And I didn't know. I kind of wanted to try something different. Now, I haven't been to every campsite and every island in the Turtle Flambeau flowage to know exactly what we're going to wander into. But I booked one this early summer. And when Robert and I got everything packed up and headed out there, we, number one, realized that the flowage was down about 17 inches from last year, which was down already 10 inches from the year before, and about 4 inches lower than a normal pool. So, I mean, we're significantly lower on the flowage right now. But that also made it a bit more of a challenge when you have a V-hull boat to get to the shorelines in some of these places. Not so much a big deal in a canoe, kayak, but a V-haul boat, you've got to be a little bit more conscious of that type of stuff. So the first campsite we rolled up to, we got to it, barely, but we got to it. And the first thing Robert and I noticed was the amount of mosquitoes in this section of the flowage. It was, you know, it's a flowage. There is moving water through the whole thing. Sometimes it doesn't seem like it. And this is one of those places where there really didn't seem to be moving water. A lot of stagnant type water, a lot of weeds. And it honestly didn't look like it was going to be really pleasant to be there.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
And so, fortunately, over the last few years, the cell service has gotten better out there. Not great, but better. And enough that I was able to get on the website slowly, but I was able to get up there, and look to see if there was other campsites available and whether or not I could change the reservations. Mm-hmm. And so I went back through, and one of the sites that we have had before, that wasn't available when I went through the first time around was now available. And so we decided to go ahead and change that reservation. Cost a little bit, but not much. It really, I think it's like $18 a night to rent these campsites. So it's not a bad, you know, price tag. So made the change and we went over to, this other campsite. Well, because the water level's so low, this is one of the, I think it's the only one on the flowage that actually has steps leading up to it. It has concrete steps that they put in to the top of this, island. And the steps were at one point, right into the water. Now you have about 9 feet of rock before you get to the steps, and then you gotta walk up the, you gotta walk up like weed fabric that's just laid on the ground to get to the steps and then carry everything up. So, fortunately I have a healthy 13-year-old boy who is able to carry a number of things these days, and not quite like the, like the 7-year-old I took, up the first time, I suppose. But, so that we, you know, we get into the campsite and everything's fine. We're set up. What we were most disappointed about, Dan, was fishing was poor. Just terrible. Oh. I mean, it was like pulling teeth to get anything to eat. Yeah, and, you know, I even ran into, Doc Sabek, Mike Sabek up there, one of the guides on the area, on the flowage, and, I didn't apologize to him because he showed me a spot, and I was in a spot when he rolled up to me, and a spot he showed me years ago, so, but in either case, he rolled up and, we talked for a little while, and he even said that, you know, fishing's really been tough. It would really is going to get very good here by the end of August, which is a very typical pattern for, the flowage. You kind of get a lull between, 20th or so of July to about, you know, the 20th or so of August. It's a little bit tougher, generally. And it's just the dog days of summer. You get very, very hot water. Generally, the water level drops a little bit. And so, gets a little bit better by the time you get to the end of August. And, but we did catch a few walleyes. We did catch a few crappies, nice crappies. I love catching crappies up on the flowage. 10-inch size limit. Caught a lot of them that were less than 10. A lot of them that were less than 7, which is good, because, there's been times I've gone up there and I didn't think, I thought they hatched at, about 9.5, 10 inches, but they do hatch smaller than that. So that's good. But so there's more for future generations, but it was all told, it was comfortable nights. Mosquitoes really weren't too bad when we got to that other, campsite. We often have issues with red squirrels trying to get into stuff all the time. We didn't have any issues there. You know, it's such a peaceful place, and I see people talk about it online all the time. You know, it looks like Canada when you get up there. It doesn't quite fish like Canada, but it is peaceful. It's really neat to be up there. Even with the ability to use technology, on the islands, I don't think that really takes anything away. If anything, we were able to look up a couple of restaurants that, we were there on a week where there wasn't a whole lot of stuff open. They ended up taking a few days to get some kitchen work done at one place, and one place had vacations. And so we were able to use some of that technology to find a place to eat one of those nights that we didn't have enough fish to make enough of a dinner for us. But either way, Dan, these are types of, this is a trip that I look forward to every year. This next year, we're going to do it a little bit more in the fall. He wants to do, some small game hunting. We did that a couple of years ago. And so we're going to do that again next year. But we're going to keep making, you know, the intentional trip, make sure it's a point to make it there.
Well, Jeff, I was up north myself last week. John and I packed a lot into 3 days. We fished the Chippewa River for bass and muskies with Bimbo Gifford. He's our teammate for the Treelands Premier Muskie Fly Fishing Championship next month, and we wanted to see how we work as a team, and we worked just fine. Bimbo rode his big flat-bottom boat, and John and I fished, and Bimbo, I also fished, and we caught a few smallmouths, and I finally caught a muskie on the fly, which I haven't done in several years. It wasn't a big one, but it was a muskie. So we had that. And then next day, John and I floated the Namekagon in his hide drift boat, which we want to get in the water a few times. Wendy Williamson suggested where we should put in. She was taking a group of women veterans on the stretch we wanted to fish, so she sent us to another stretch, and it was fun floating. We saw an eagle a couple times, saw one smallmouth, a whole bunch of suckers, didn't catch anything, but it was a good day. And then Thursday, we played golf with Tim Lesmeister and a friend of John's, and you're not a golfer, I know.
No, not really.
We played best ball all the way, which means there were five of us, actually, a friend of John's and a friend of his who was visiting. Everybody hits a tee shot, then you pick the best one, and everybody hits from there, and then you pick the best shot for the second shot, and everybody hits from there. We did that all the way to the green and even to the putting, and we were four under on nine holes, which is really good. And it was fun because it was not competition. We're all working together. And then Thursday afternoon, we did a five-hour sailing trip on Lake Superior with John running the boat, and Mark and Connie LaBarbera joined us, and we went to Hermit Island. There's a cave there where you get in the dinghy, and you paddle over to the cave, and you actually lie on your back, and you pull yourself into this cave. It's got about 2 feet of clearance, and you're in there. You can only do it on a calm day, and it was really crazy. It was a lot of fun, and I can just imagine doing that if you, if you got a family and kids. That's something you might think about, next year. I think your kids would enjoy that. Then on the way home, I stopped to visit Dave Roll in his new home near Weyerhaeuser, where he's seeing deer and turkeys and bear. He just sent me a photo of a bear, or a video of a bear on the trail behind his house. And we looked at footage for the Deer Hunt Wisconsin show that we're going to be doing later this year. And then I limped home, and now I'm playing catch-up this week. But you're off to South Dakota, right?
I am. South Dakota Masters Walleye Circuit event in Webster, South Dakota on Bitter Lake. And then next week, Garrison, North Dakota for the National Walleye Tour Championship.
All right. Well, we will not try to catch up with you in North Dakota, but I'm glad we caught you before you took off for South Dakota. Travel safe, and, well, we'll talk to you here at the wrap, too, but we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good, Dan. Thanks.
Coming up, J.C. Chamberlain offers some tips for practicing with broadheads. Dick Hartman invites us to attend the Jordan Buck Celebration in Danbury. And antique lure collector Chris Slusar weighs in on Louis Spray's world record muskie. All that and more straight ahead on Outdoors Radio.
Pappas Trading Post is Southern Wisconsin's number one Matthews and Mission archery retailer. Located just west of Arena on Highway 14, they have a full-service pro shop, a 40-yard indoor range, a large selection of archery accessories, and a full assortment of Matthews apparel. Their expert staff can tune your bow for top performance. Gear up for bow season at Pappas Trading Post. Look for the two giant arrows and stop at Pappas Trading Post on Highway 14 west of Arena, or visit PappasTradingPost.com.
Hi, my name is Dr. Allie Anderson, an audiologist with Professional Hearing Care. I myself know how much fun it is to be at deer camp telling stories and playing cards. However, when you have a hearing loss, it can be very difficult and taxing on the brain long term. If you or a loved one has been experiencing hearing loss or tinnitus, give our clinic a call at 608-292-4916 or go to profhearingcare.com to book a free consultation.
Enjoy the ultimate shooting experience at the Range of Richfield, your one-stop shop for all shooters. Just north of the Richfield Cabela's store on Helson Drive, the Range of Richfield offers 12 state-of-the-art 25-yard indoor shooting lanes for all pistol and common rifle loads, classes in home defense, basic handgun and concealed carry, a retail shop, trophy mount display, and more in a welcoming, family-friendly setting. Open daily except Monday to the public and members. Your ultimate shooting experience, therangewi.com.
Here's a message from our friends at Remy Battery in Milwaukee, Waukesha, Escanaba, and Houghton. As we continue strong in almost 100 years of providing our community with high-quality batteries, we want to thank all of our customers and friends we have made over the years. We invite you to visit our newest location on Sunset Drive in Waukesha, formerly Challenger Battery. We have batteries from the largest military crafts and industrial machinery to alkaline and the smallest hearing aids. Big and small, we have them all. Stop in for a free battery and electrical check before you hit the road, trails, or the waters. Don't forget to ask our sales representatives about volume pricing. Call Remy at 414-384-0340 or visit online at remybattery.com for all your battery and battery accessory needs.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
There are lakes across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and beyond that are loaded with fish. And nobody's talking about them. Onyx Fish helps you find them. Search by species, filter for big walleye, trophy panfish, or eater crappies. Check satellite imagery, depth maps, and public access points, all before you leave the house. And now, Onyx Fish is available on Android for the first time. iPhone, Android, doesn't matter. Just download it and start planning. 7-day free trial, then just $35 a year. Onyx Fish. Find new lakes, get there with confidence.
The final countdown has begun. The Ducks Unlimited National Trip Auction puts incredible trips right at your fingertips, and it all starts at ducks.org/NTA. Take one last look, pick your favorite, and don't wait for next year. Bidding closes on Monday, August 25th at 8 p.m. Central. The DU National Trip Auction, presented by Google.
Welcome back to your source for the latest hunting and fishing information. Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Madison Outdoors is brought to you by Pappas Trading Post. They are Wisconsin's number one Matthews and Mission archery retailer, and they're located on State Highway 14, just west of Arena, Wisconsin, and about a half hour west of Madison. You can also find them on the web at pappastradingpost.com. And joining us once again is wildlife biologist and Trading Post archery expert, J.C. Chamberlain. J.C., thanks for joining us, and welcome back to the Outdoors Radio Network.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's always a pleasure.
Well, we have fun talking about deer hunting as we approach the season, and gosh, we're what, about a month out now?
Yeah, just under. It's sneaking up on us really quick.
Yeah, it sure is. So what are you seeing and what are you hearing from your clients and your friends?
Things, I think they're looking up this year. You know, even though we've had a somewhat dry spell here through the summer, antler growth seems to be very good. We've had real good reports from a lot of the customers out there. And honestly, you know, I haven't been out a ton right around, but what little bit I have around here, I'm seeing good growth and pretty good numbers as well.
So, that's good. Yeah. I see deer when I'm out driving. I have not spent much time in the woods myself, but done a lot of driving up north and around the state, and I'm seeing deer. I've seen a couple bucks, but not many. But to see them, you really got to be early morning, early evening, times when they're moving, right?
Yeah, I mean, generally this time of year when it is warmer out or very muggy, humid, you know, a lot of the times that's going to be those first few minutes of daylight, last few. Once in a while, you'll catch them out in the middle of the day, but definitely seems like those hot, muggy days, they like to be kind of closer to that dark period for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned that it's been dry. We had some rain this week, but I read a DNR report that there were some deer found that were diagnosed as having died from EHD, and I believe that was in Washington County. Have you seen or heard anything like that in our area?
I haven't heard near as much about it out, you know, in our neck of the woods here this year as we have in past. I don't know if it's guys are taking more precautions against it or, you know, that we just didn't necessarily have the timing that we have in the past where you had a lot of that mud that was handy for those midges and stuff to grow. And, you know, so far, fingers crossed, everything seems to be pretty clear out on this west end of the state anyway.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, what should we be doing now with the season about a month away?
Now it's really the time to hopefully be making some of those final preps, especially if you're going to hunt opening weekend. It's a great time to get out, shoot broadheads, double check, make sure that the bow or the crossbow is shooting well, and again, shooting those hunting heads. You know, things can change. A broadhead is going to be a lot more critical of us and the bow's tune than, you know, a field tip will. Everything can be flying great with a field tip, but broadhead may not hit in the same spot. And especially if you're a long distance shooter, most of those guys are on top of it, but definitely want to be shooting those heads out to those distances if you're planning on taking advantage of that throughout the fall.
And what kind of target can you safely shoot at with a broadhead if you're just starting that?
There's actually a lot of, you know, broadhead design targets or, block style. Reinhardt's, their blocks are very good. 365 makes a great block in their targets. It's, you know, like a 14-inch core. It's a cube, actually, so you can flip it different dots and different sizes. Works great. Morale's got one, like the high roller is a great target. Just something that you can get those broadheads in and out of without too much trouble. Bag targets are a definite no. You're going to lose that head and compromise the target even because you're leaving that head in the target.
Well, yeah. Now, I have a discharge bag for crossbow, a yellow jacket bag, and I know I've shot broadheads into that. Is that one I shouldn't be shooting broadheads at?
Yeah, that one you typically don't want to. With that one, probably with the crossbow anyway, you're probably okay because it'll probably go through it, so you can unscrew it and pull it back through.
Mm-hmm.
Or depending on the head that you're using, if it does close or, you know, doesn't have a sharp back edge. But definitely foam targets are the way to go when it comes to broadheads.
Okay. Well, if I'm shooting broadheads and I find I'm not getting the groups I was getting with field tips, what can I do?
There can be a lot of different things that fall into that. You know, if it's something where you've had the bow in and it's been tuned up, things have been flying good, chances are it's probably a small thing that we're doing. It still could be a slight adjustment of the rest, but normally it's going to be like in how we grip the bow, or we see a lot, especially with the high let off bows. Guys, if you have any face pressure or if you have facial hair, that high let-off bow can be very critical about touching the string and really cause some funky things to happen there.
So a broadhead is more responsive to any little errors you might make than a field point?
Yeah, it's definitely more critical. You got to think of it as putting fletchings on the front of that arrow. It's not going to want to correct as easily as it would if it was just a field tip out front.
Okay. Well, good to know. Well, how about accessories? What have you got in stock?
Right now, stock is pretty good. We got pretty much all the sights, rests, quivers. You know, there's always going to be maybe a few models here and there that are somewhat of oddities that we might not have a ton of. But for the most part, with all the bread and butter stuff, we have plenty of stuff here to look at and check out and make a decision on what you'd like to try for the year.
Okay. And if my bow needs some work because of something I do when I pull it out in practice or something I noticed that was already going wrong with it, is there still time to make repairs and adjustments?
Oh, absolutely. The rut, which is what most everybody's going to hunt, is quite a ways away yet. Even still, like, we're running for the most part about 5 days to a week out on service, so things have been turning over pretty quick, and we're able to get you back out there and hunting.
Okay, that's good. Well, before we let you go, store hours?
We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, and Saturday, 9 to 5.
All right. Well, next time, let's talk about early season tactics. I want to save that for just before the season, but we want to get your thoughts on that.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, thanks for having us, and look forward to it.
All right. J.C. Chamberlain with Pappas Trading Post. They are located on State Highway 14 west of Arena, about a half hour west of Madison, and on the web at pappastradingpost.com. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
You're listening to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Over the last few weeks, I've been talking with Chris Slusar. He's an historian and a fishing lure collector and the author of a book called Early Wisconsin Fishing Lures, Hooks, and Harnesses, An Illustrated History of Wisconsin Fishing Lures and Their Makers. And history is a key word here. And Chris joins us again now. Chris, we ought to talk about Louis Spray. You feature Louis in your book. You show him with several of the muskies that he caught that were supposedly world records. I've heard stories from people who are credible that suggest that Louis never caught that biggest muskie, that 69-pound, 11-ounce fish. Do you know anything about that?
Wow, quite the controversial topic. I believe that he caught a fish. Whether or not it weighed 69 pounds is maybe the bigger question. Like you, I've heard too that he didn't actually catch the fish himself. But boy, I'll tell you, Louis was certainly a character, and there's a lot of lore out there that surrounds him and frankly other fishermen at the time. Do I believe that he caught big fish? Absolutely. Did he catch the world record? Well, they're definitely advocates for that position. And there are just as many folks that challenge it and have reason to challenge it. At the end of the day, I think I sit squarely on the fence. no doubt he is an interesting character and part of the fabric of the North Woods at the time. And he shares a lot of characteristics of a lot of fishermen at the time. There are quite a few storytellers for sure. He is covered in my book. I do have some images of him holding muskies. He did market sucker harness, which is why he's in the book. But interesting thing about it is not perfectly clear that he actually sold the harness as much as a piece of paper that described how to fabricate the harness. So really an interesting guy, and your listeners can find quite a bit of information on Louis in different books and online. So if you want to get into some interesting muskie history in the state, plug in Louis Spray and read away.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you mentioned he sold those instructions. I think it was 10 cents, and I'll send you the diagram on how to make one of these harnesses. And I remember, I mean, I'm not of his vintage, but I'm old enough to remember when we would tape dimes and nickels and quarters to a card and put a couple of 2-cent stamps on the envelope and send it off and get things like that in the mail, you know. Those days are long gone now, of course.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he was a relentless marketer and always tried to capitalize on his recognition. So he took a shot at many different businesses during his lifetime, and this was just one more business opportunity for him.
Yeah. And of course, nowadays we have digital scales and digital photos, and so we can record more accurately the size and weight and location, what we caught the fish on and that type of thing. But back in those days, even 20 years ago, that wasn't possible. I grew up in upstate New York, and we had an annual fishing contest that the Genesee Beer Company sponsored. It was the Lewis A. Whaley Fishing Contest. It was a monthly or a weekly thing, and I remember, I can't think of their names right now, but I remember two couples who routinely caught big muskies on the St. Lawrence River, and they were always beating each other one after the other. And it later came out that they were filling those fish with sand, with wet sand, and then weighing them.
Yeah, there have been many muskie records that have been dismissed years later for a variety of different reasons, and the history books are filled with them. So I guess I would say that that kind of thing and that sort of cheating and stretching of the truth was not uncommon at that time. The history books and just filled with examples of that. So I personally recognize that was an issue, and that there are many strong feelings about that amongst the fishing community. But
I kind of look at it as just part of the fabric of fishing at that time. It doesn't take away from the characters that made up the fishing world at that time. So I quite enjoy all that background and history.
Yeah, it makes interesting reading and campfire conversation now, but a new world record muskie or bass would probably be worth millions of dollars to whoever catches it. And so a lot of money would be on the line, and the incentive is certainly there to do a little more than just stretch the truth.
That's right. Although I would say in today's world, it would be more difficult to pull off some of the stunts that happened 80, 90 years ago for lots of reasons. But you're absolutely right. World records of that kind would almost certainly be worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And no doubt the muskie record in particular, I think, will fall at some point. Muskies are now, you know, prevalent in areas that they were not before. Some of the fisheries, even in the Great Lakes, are well known now for producing some quite massive fish. So will the time come when the record falls? Yeah, I think so. Who knows exactly, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was in the next several years.
Wow. Okay. You think Green Bay and Mille Lacs and places like that with big fish have a chance of pushing 70 pounds?
Yeah, I do. And certainly we've seen some big fish come out in that low 60-pound category. Could we get to 70? Sure. I don't know why not, especially with the focus on big fish.
It'll be interesting to see what happens if somebody catches one. Jeff Van Remortel caught and released a 56-incher, I think it was on Green Bay. What did that fish weigh? I don't know. What would it take to break 70 pounds? And if you get close to that, are you going to kill the fish because you got to bring it in to weigh it? And how do you handle a fish that big? I think I'd jump out of the boat if I hooked a fish that big.
No, you're absolutely right. Very difficult to land and release successfully. And certainly anyone getting that size fish would want to photograph it. Just that means that there wouldn't be a quick water release and a very challenging situation. But any musky fisherman out there that gets a fish that big is going to want to get a picture of it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. You got another book in you?
Well, maybe I'm thinking about possibly doing something that takes the Wisconsin fishing tackle another 20 years, 30 years or so. I'm also looking at another project that would cover a couple of other specific fishing tackle manufacturers outside the state. So we'll see. Right now I've got the National Fishing Lure Collectors Club to run, and that's taking a lot of my time. Who knows? After that, I may take on another book.
Yeah, a couple things come to mind, soft baits and ice fishing lures and tackle, because ice fishermen have come up with all kinds of gadgets over the years. I think just sitting on a bucket on the ice for hours on end, which is what we used to do before fish locators came into play, gave people time to think about making a better lure, a better mousetrap, so to speak.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, fish decoys are another area that have some interest in. There are already some really good books on fish decoys, which of course would have been used in ice fishing. I've got a pretty good collection of decoys that came out of the Lac des Flambeaux area, which at least in this state, in the state of Wisconsin, is probably one of the best known areas for fish decoys, that in Lake Winnebago. Outside of the state, Minnesota and Michigan have even deeper histories there. So soft side baits, that could be interesting and maybe more appealing to a different audience than collectors. A lot of the soft side stuff isn't necessarily in the crosshairs of the collector community right now. But like everything else, what's collectible tomorrow is different than what's collectible today. So it's constantly evolving.
Yeah, but there are some perennials, so I think I'll hang on to my Mickey Mantle rookie baseball card.
There you go. That's great. That's great. Yeah, do that. Do that. We'll see. I'll certainly stay in touch and let you know if I gravitate into another book. I'm happy to do follow-ups and any other questions relating to old fishing tackle. I'm happy to help with.
Well, thank you so much. We will keep in touch, Chris.
All right, Dan. Hey, thank you. You take care.
Yeah, you too. Chris Slusar, folks, is the president of the National Lure Collectors Club, and he's the author of a new book, Early Wisconsin Fishing Lures, Hooks and Harnesses, An Illustrated History of Wisconsin Fishing Lures and Their Makers. You can get a copy or learn more about it at littlecreekpress.com, and you can reach Chris directly at wisconsinlures@gmail.com. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
If you want to catch a big walleye, go where the big walleyes are. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world. With a variety of resorts and lodging facilities offering full-service fishing, Lake of the Woods is also home to sturgeon, sauger, perch, trophy pike, muskie, smallmouth bass, burbot, and more. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods today. Go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Step outside, let us be your guide. Florence County, Wisconsin.
Are you looking for that perfect Northwoods destination for outdoor recreation? Florence County has over 200,000 acres of uncrowded public land with 160 plus miles of beautiful ATV-UTV trails, many lakes and rivers to fish or paddle, seven wild river waterfalls to explore, horse trails with campgrounds, and friendly bars and restaurants. Go to exploreflorencecounty.com and plan your trip today.
Since our inception, Huntworth has worked relentlessly to incorporate innovative technologies and forward-thinking design into affordable camouflage apparel. Our gear, designed with the Disruption Camo pattern, utilizes computer-generated graphics featuring a high level of random and abstract visual noise to help you remain undetected in the environment. So whether you need the latest in hunting gear technology or clothing that just simply fits your lifestyle, Huntworth gear is what you're looking for. HuntworthGear.com. That's HuntworthGear.com.
Pappas Trading Post is Southern Wisconsin's number one Matthews and Mission archery retailer. Located just west of Arena on Highway 14, they have a full-service pro shop, a 40-yard indoor range, a large selection of archery accessories, and a full assortment of Matthews apparel. Their expert staff can tune your bow for top performance. Gear up for bow season at Pappas Trading Post. Look for the two giant arrows and stop at Pappas Trading Post on Highway 14 west of Arena or visit PappasTradingPost.com.
Hi, my name is Dr. Allie Anderson, an audiologist with Professional Hearing Care. I myself know how much fun it is to be at deer camp telling stories and playing cards. However, when you have a hearing loss, it can be very difficult and taxing on the brain long term. If you or a loved one has been experiencing hearing loss or tinnitus, give our clinic a call at 608-292-4916 or go to profhearingcare.com to book a free consultation.
Welcome back to your source for the latest hunting and fishing information, Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Dan Small. Most listeners, at least those who are deer hunters, have heard of the Jordan buck, and it's the former world record whitetail killed in Burnett County in 1914 by Jim Jordan. And you might have seen replicas of the mount at sports shows or on display at Bass Pro Shops. Well, several years ago, 5 years ago now, the Jordan buck came home to Danbury, Wisconsin, where they celebrate the former world record buck every year on National Hunting and Fishing Day, which this year is Saturday, September 26th. And joining us to tell us all about it is Dick Hartman. He's Director of Economic Development for Burnett County, and he's been on the show before to talk about the Jordan buck. But, Dick, welcome back to the Outdoors Radio Network, and thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for inviting us, Dan. Yeah, we do celebrate this event because we feel it's very significant for Burnett County. It tends to draw quite a few people from around the area. It's a one-day event starting on September 26th in the morning and lasting all day. We're celebrating Jim Jordan's memorial buck that was shot over 100 years ago. It's pretty significant. There's a statue that's probably 21 feet long and 12 feet wide and 14 feet high to commemorate the event. And the statue is very much a replica, especially the antlers. It was a record for North America for a long time. It's still typical record for the United States.
And it's the biggest buck ever taken in Wisconsin, certainly, biggest typical. We featured this event on last year's Deer Hunt Wisconsin show, and people can find that on the YouTube channel, Deer Hunt Wisconsin. But for people who don't know, never heard of Jim Jordan, what is this all about? Tell us about his hunt and the story of what happened to the rack until it came back to Wisconsin.
Back in the day, they hunted for food. So he was a meat hunter. He had gone out the morning opening day of deer season with one of his friends, and they're walking down the railroad tracks just outside of Danbury, which is now the Gandy Dancer Trail. They've pulled up the rails, and the Gandy Dancer goes through three different counties. As they were walking, a train whistle blew. The deer jumped up. Jim saw it was just a rack, and he saw that. He said, so it took off, and they started tracking it, and he finally got it in an open area where he took a shot. And then he took another shot, and the deer disappeared. So he went up and fired his last shell, and when they got up to the deer, he didn't have a knife. So he went back to get a knife, and when he got back to where the deer was laying along the river, it was gone. They surmised that the deer had maybe rolled into the river. So they went downstream, and sure enough, the deer was caught in some brush on a river. And it took them a number of men to pull it out because it was huge. And then they brought her back to Danbury and had it weighed at, I think, a local meat market. And I think it dressed out close to 400 pounds. So
yeah.
It was a monster.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he wanted to get the rack. He saved the rack, so he brought it to a taxidermist over in Minnesota. And, you know, he kind of lost track of it. After that, the guy went out of business, and the rack was not to be found. It was purchased by somebody out of New York. I don't have the exact names. So it floated around for a number of years, and it finally ended up back in Jim Jordan's hands. But, it you know, I don't think he ever saw the final product, you know, after the taxidermist got through with it. So, but yeah, this is I read about this story in Boy's Life when I was 8 years old. So it's been for a while.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story and a lot of lucky coincidences. I think one of his relatives found it in a garage sale and bought it for a couple dollars. And anyway, it's changed hands many times. And now it's safe in the keeping of Johnny Morris and the Bass Pro Shops folks down in Springfield, Missouri. But the replica is there in full display, and you have your one-day-a-year celebration, Jordan Buck Day. So what's going to happen on the 26th of September?
The activities start in the morning. You know, we have a lot of events. This is a family-friendly type of operation. We have a craft fair that provides crafters from all over the area. We have food trucks, so there's lots of stuff to eat, lots of stuff to do. Local businesses open their doors. We have informational booths from the DNR and some of the other state agencies that talk about hunting and, you know, safety and all that good stuff. And we also have a parade, which starts at noon. And this year we've got a Jordan Buck puppet, which is a two-person puppet designed and built by Northwest Passage Galleries in Webster, Wisconsin. So there's two people on this thing that's going to be walking in the parade along with floats and local band, fire trucks, and other groups, dignitaries. And then from there, we have kids' activities. We have a basketball free throw contest, watercolor activities, painting. There's pinball tournament, deer corn treasure hunt for the kids, country line dancing in the afternoon, music late afternoon into the evening from a number of tribute bands in the area, and fire department has an open house. We also have a horse-drawn carriage that provides tours down the Gandy Nance Trail that shows the area where the buck was actually shot and where it ended up. So it's a kind of an interesting situation. There's also an informational kiosk in the park that kind of explains the event. It's a fun day.
Yeah, how big is Danbury?
Danbury is unincorporated. During the winter months, it's probably about 300 people, maybe. But in summer, it kind of blossoms, obviously. We have the St. Croix National Scenic Waterway that goes right through the town. It's a reservation community adjacent to Danbury. the St. Croix Chippewa, and there's, I can't recall how many lakes, there's probably 50 or 60 lakes within a stone's throw of the Danbury area. We have a lot of weekenders. We have a lot of short-term rentals that kind of replace the old family resorts on lakes. So there's accommodations, there's, you know, restaurants, entertainment weekly during the summer months. Winter, if there's snow, we have a lot of snowmobilers, and we've also got a lot of miles of trails in the area that originate in Danbury, going north on the Gandy Dancer. It's all motorized. And then there's the county has a lot of side-by-side, multi-use type trails. Very popular in that respect.
Yeah. Do you still get a lot of deer hunters in the area?
Yeah. Well, deer hunting is kind of like a national holiday. Everything kind of shuts down, including the schools, it seems like. Yeah, there's a tremendous influx for that week. That's a pretty much a bumper week, not just for our community, but the, you know, whole northern part of the state primarily. But we get hunters from, you know, Minnesota because we are right on the border, basically across the river from the state of Minnesota. We also have a lot of local hunters, and we have a lot of county forests, a lot of public property. So, you know, there's not a lot of problems with finding a place to hunt. You know, you just kind of got to come early and scout it out because there are going to be other people out there.
Yeah. Have there been many big bucks, not as big as the Jordan buck, but, you know, approaching that, that were taken in Burnett County?
There's a lot of big antlered bucks. Body-wise, I'm not so much sure, but there are still some big bucks in the area that are taken every year. There was one that was poached about 3 years ago, unfortunately, in the Purtle area that is sitting on the wall in the county board chambers right now. It doesn't match the size, and it's not typical, but it is a beautiful animal, and there are quite a few of those. But I think that gene pool may still be around. You know, it's a kind of a river buck the way they see it. The river bottoms seem to harbor a lot of bigger animals. So we have a lot of deer that are registered in this county. So
I suppose someone hunting up there might be thinking, well, maybe there's an offspring or, you know, multi-generation, 100 years, gosh, that would be.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And Burnett County is kind of a mixture of forest and ag, so there's an abundance of food and water, obviously, and then cover. You know, we're an ideal hunting county. For the size of county we have a very small permanent population of less than 20,000, but that blossoms, in some cases, tripled in the summer months, so we rely heavily on visitors.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure you'll get visitors for this event coming up on September 26th and for deer season, both bow and gun season, as hunters hope to find maybe the, 100 generation removed offspring of that famous Jordan buck.
Right. We're always touting that there are deer that size still in the forests up here. I guess that thought is the hope of the deer hunter.
Yeah, just got to spend some time and hope to find them.
Right. Well, I think we had about 8,000 people, so we're constantly growing. It seems to have grown quite a bit in the last 5 years.
8,000 people come to this event. That's amazing.
Yeah, for a small unincorporated area.
For sure. Well, Dick, I hope you have a great event, and I appreciate you taking time to share some info on it with us today, and we will keep in touch.
Great. Thanks, Dan.
Folks, that was Dick Hartman. He is Director of Economic Development for Burnett County. We were talking about Jordan Buck Day, which is held on Saturday, September 26th, and you can learn more about this event and other fun things to do in Burnett County at burnettcountyfun.com. I'm Dan Small. More Outdoors Radio right after this.
For the nonprofit Ruffed Grouse Society, the well-being of the ruffed grouse and American woodcock is a special priority. But the Society's conservation work benefits more than just these two game birds. The organization's programs help a long list of other young forest wildlife, including songbirds that must have thick, brushy habitat to survive. For more information about forest wildlife habitat management, contact the Ruffed Grouse Society toll-free at 888-JOIN-RGS.
Enjoy the ultimate shooting experience at the Range of Richfield, your one-stop shop for all shooters. Just north of the Richfield Cabela's store on Helson Drive, the Range of Richfield offers 12 state-of-the-art 25-yard indoor shooting lanes for all pistol and common rifle loads, classes in home defense, basic handgun and concealed carry, a retail shop, trophy mount display, and more in a welcoming, family-friendly setting. Open daily except Monday to the public and members. Your ultimate shooting experience, therangewi.com.
Since our inception, Huntworth has worked relentlessly to incorporate innovative technologies and forward-thinking design into affordable camouflage apparel. Our gear, designed with the Disruption Camo pattern, utilizes computer-generated graphics featuring a high level of random and abstract visual noise to help you remain undetected in the environment. So whether you need the latest in hunting gear technology or clothing that just simply fits your lifestyle, Huntworth gear is what you're looking for. HuntworthGear.com. That's HuntworthGear.com.
Step outside, let us be your guide. Florence County, Wisconsin.
Are you looking for that perfect Northwoods destination for outdoor recreation? Florence County has over 200,000 acres of uncrowded public land with 160 plus miles of beautiful ATV-UTV trails, many lakes and rivers to fish or paddle, seven wild river waterfalls to explore, horse trails with campgrounds, and friendly bars and restaurants. Go to exploreflorencecounty.com and plan your trip today.
If you want to catch a big walleye, go where the big walleyes are. Lake of the Woods is the walleye capital of the world. With a variety of resorts and lodging facilities offering full-service fishing, Lake of the Woods is also home to sturgeon, sauger, perch, trophy pike, muskie, smallmouth bass, burbot, and more. Plan your trip to Lake of the Woods today. Go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio with Dan Small.
Welcome back to Outdoors Radio. I'm Jeff Kelm. We are brought to you by Cedar Lake Sales on Highway 33 West in West Bend, on the web at cedarlakesales.com, by Crestliner Boats at crestliner.com, and by Mercury Marine at mercurymarine.com. We're also brought to you by Huntworth Gear, engineered for performance, available at Blaine's Farm and Fleet and other retailers, and at huntworthgear.com, and by Professional Hearing Care, LLC of Mauston, La Crosse, Westby, Fitchburg, Green Bay, and now Wapaka, profhearingcare.com.
And if our TV show Outdoor Wisconsin is not airing where you live, you can always watch past episodes at milwaukeepbs.org. And the Deer Hunt Wisconsin TV special that I'm working on this year, show is not ready yet, but last year's show and several from other recent years are archived on YouTube at Deer Hunt Wisconsin.
And everything that we talked about today is online all the time, including past shows, by the way. You can get online and listen to those. Lake-link.com. Go to their outdoor radio page, and you can download it there and take it with you. Or you can go to outdoornews.com/podcast and do it that way. You can follow Dan on social media as Dan Small Outdoors. You can follow me at Hardwater Jeff.
Well, folks, you got to forgive me for a couple of lapses. I forgot to let you know that leftover fall turkey permits went on sale last Saturday. Dave Roll mentioned it to me on Friday. We had already recorded the show, and somehow I had not gotten that memo. And apparently not many people are interested, because as of midweek here, I think some tags are still available. And I also forgot to mention that bonus antlerless permits went on sale this past Monday, starting with the forest zone tags. I did get that memo, but I got it last Friday late after last week's show was already recorded and sent to our broadcast stations and podcast feed. So nothing I could do about it. I hope you found out some other way and got your permits. Well, one more thing from DNR. Counter service at all service counters, DNR service counters, that is, will be unavailable next Wednesday and Thursday, 26th and 27th of August. All DNR staff who man those counters will be in training on those 2 days. The DNR tip line will still be available, and you can buy permits and other services on your Go Wild account, of course, and license agents at retail stores like Fleet Farm, Farm and Fleet, and many hardware stores and tackle shops. They will still be able to sell your licenses, trail passes, and other services. And then everything will be back working again on Friday the 28th. They also tell us if you're setting up deer stands, avoid ash trees. You should know that by now, especially dead ash trees. They're brittle. They can break or fall, even on calm days. And if you can't ID an ash tree, well, just avoid putting tree stands on or near any dead trees of any kind. And there's ID info on the DNR website. Keywords are tree stand safety. Our theme music is by Warren Nelson. For more on Warren and his music, visit warrennelson.com. I'm Dan Small, here with Jeff Kelm. Jeff, travel safely. We'll catch up with you when you're back from North Dakota.
Sounds good, Dan. Thank you.
And folks, we've been getting outside. Now you get outside this weekend, and be sure to join us again next week for Outdoors Radio.